As you're settling in, let me pose a question to you for you to think about for just a minute. If you were to take a young lady, a young girl, or maybe even a girl that is growing up into her teenage years, and you were to just ask her, what do you want to be when you grow up? What kind of answers do you think that you would get to that question? Now, I'll tell you, I think you could probably expect a pretty wide variety of answers, because we live in a world where I don't think there's a shortage of opportunities. And so you might imagine a young girl would say, well, I want to grow up and I want to be a doctor, or I want to be a dentist, or a vet, or I want to be a teacher, or just whatever else you can imagine putting on the list. And I don't think any of those aspirations are wrong at all. But I do wonder how many would say, when I grow up, I want to be a mother. How many would say, I want to be a mother? And I would imagine that is probably pretty low on the list. And it very well may be kind of due to this cultural view that surrounds us now, that places very little value on motherhood. I can imagine to the young lady who says, I want to be a mom when I grow up, I can imagine the world would scoff at her. I can imagine that they would call her old-fashioned, and they may accuse her of not being ambitious enough, as if it would be some major disappointment or some major underachievement if that's all she ended up being. Now, I am hopeful for all of us sitting here this morning that our view of motherhood is much different than that. But I don't think it is safe to assume that we always value motherhood the way that God does and the way that we should. Now, I am not suggesting that in the church we have intentionally diminished the importance of motherhood, but I would suggest that maybe we don't always do as much as we should to change the narrative. As a matter of fact, we may inadvertently kind of add to that cultural narrative. For instance, just think about in our local church here, and we've got a lot of visitors here this morning, so just think about in your own congregation, in your own assemblies, how often do we focus on the work of men? How often do we praise the works of men? And how often do we pray for the men who are doing the work in our congregations? Versus how often we vocalize and pray about the work that the women do. As a dad who is bringing up three daughters, I'm very aware that as my daughters grow up in a congregation, that there are going to be some young men who grow up alongside of them, and one day those young men are going to start standing up here where I am, and they're going to start taking a very public part in the worship service. And I think that we need to encourage that. We need to be bringing up young men who will one day be good worship leaders. And so as those young men do that, they will hear lots and lots of praise. They will be commended for their courage, and they will hear how valuable they are one day going to be to the church because of their abilities. And we need to encourage that. But my question is, what will our young women who are growing up trying to be servants of the Lord, what will they hear said about them? What will their praise be? And what will be their encouragement for the work that they are trying to do? So, I think it is clear that this morning I'm going to talk about mothers. And I feel like every time I preach a sermon in which we're going to talk about a very specific audience, I always feel like I need to tell everybody else why you still need to be listening, okay? So here it goes. Now, if you are right in the heart of motherhood, this is very much maybe most valuable for you. But there are some of you who will one day be mothers. And it will be valuable to you when you get in that moment in your life. There are lots of husbands and dads here this morning. And you need to just learn or be refreshed about the value and the importance of the mother of your children. And there are some guys here who maybe children are not in your family yet, but it will happen one day. And of course there are some young men here who are not married. And I will tell you, you need to be listening today because you need to figure out what it is that you need to be looking for in the woman that you choose to marry. And so this will be valuable for you. And I've already kind of mentioned some of the things that I'm going to talk about are not super specific to mothers. It's more general about women. And so if you are a woman here in any capacity, this is important to you. And if you don't find yourself in any of those categories at all, if you are a citizen of this world, you need to listen for no other reason than we live in a society with an incredibly distorted view of women and motherhood. And all of us need to be working to change that narrative. I want to suggest from the beginning that a woman is not valuable because she can make it in the corporate world. A woman's value is not because she can hold the same positions that any man could hold. A woman's value is not based on the amount of money that she can bring into a home. The value of a woman lies in being what God wants her to be. You might recall at the end of the Proverbs 31 passage, the Proverbs writer alludes to that. And then I think about this passage in 1 Peter chapter 3. And now Peter has a context that he's working with there. But he shows us, I think, something about what God finds valuable. As a matter of fact, he says very specifically that what God finds precious, what God finds precious is a woman that has a gentle and quiet spirit. A woman who has a pure heart. A woman who knows that she is way more than just some physical appearance. Charm and beauty are deceiving. God is looking for people with pure hearts. And that is true for men and women. So don't let the world define what is valuable. We need to come back regularly to see what God says is valuable. And that's what we need to care about. And so if you are a woman and specifically a mother here this morning, do not feel pressure to cave to the pressure of society to be something that society says you should be or else you are a failure. You just need to be what God wants you to be. And that will serve you well all of your life. So, now that I've introduced that and now that I've hopefully roped all of you into listening, let me just share with you several observations about motherhood. I feel like I'm preaching to the choir here. Motherhood, though, you recognize is hard. And mothers are probably staring back at me thinking, you have no idea. But here's what I mean by this. Motherhood is hard from the very beginning. You remember in Genesis chapter 3, sin first enters into the world. Satan was able to deceive Adam or deceive Eve and her and Adam were, they fell to that temptation. And in Genesis chapter 3, God is telling this is what are the consequences of that sin. And he says specifically there in verse 16, to the woman, I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth and in pain you will bring forth children. Now, it is very clear that he says one of the consequences of sin now being in this world is that when you bring a child into this world, there is going to be a pain associated with that. But I will tell you, I don't think Genesis 3:16 is limited to just the day of birth. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure that it's not pointing to the fact that you are now going to be bringing people into a broken world. And every mother has experienced that. You have brought a child into the world and there are difficulties in this world. This world is going to be mean to your children. This world is going to throw a lot at your children. And you know who feels that? Mothers feel that. As a matter of fact, we don't have to get very far into motherhood in the Bible to start seeing that. Because Genesis chapter 3 tells us about the consequences of sin towards mothers. And then in Genesis chapter 4, do you know what happens? Eve becomes the first mother of the Bible. The first birth of the Bible happens in Genesis chapter 4. And she's excited about that. She acknowledges that because of the Lord, I get to be a mother. But the excitement of that quickly fades away because by the time you get to the end of Genesis chapter 4, do you know what's already happened? She's lost both of her sons. And what I mean by that is Cain killed Abel. And so she lost Abel to physical death, but there is a sense in which she also lost Cain too. And so from the very beginning of motherhood in the Bible, we begin to understand that motherhood is hard. And there are lots and lots of things that really go under the category of motherhood being hard. But let me just suggest another thing. That motherhood is a thankless job. I'm wondering, how much work does a mother put in that just goes completely unrecognized and unnoticed, unpraised? And I don't think we could actually put a value to that. But I compare that to a man who goes to his job every day. And if you're a man and you're going to your job every day, if you do a good job, do you know what you probably hear on a regular basis? You probably hear, good job. You get a pat on the back. And if you do really good at your job, you will be recognized for that and you will be promoted and you will get a raise. And I think that's a good thing that we go and we do well in our jobs. But I'm wondering about the woman who has given her life entirely to her family. How many days or weeks or months or even years go by where she has poured herself into this job? She has poured herself into this life's work and she gets very little affirmation. There are no ceremonies celebrating her rise up the ladder. There are no plaques to go on the wall. Probably not very much by way of a raise. It's just the daily grind of motherhood. And so that thanklessness can happen in our homes. I want to even suggest that sometimes it can happen even in our churches. I mentioned this kind of earlier in the introduction. How much recognition and praise do we offer our mothers? Well, today we're going to recognize and praise and honor our mothers. But sadly, how much of that happens when it's not Mother's Day? And again, I compare that to what a man might hear on a regular basis. And I'm living proof of this because I'm a preacher, but at the end of just about any given service, it may be me or Jim or Jacob, we will hear from lots of you something that affirms you did good today. That was a good job. You made some points that I had never thought of before, or you helped me in some way. It may not be anything other than good sermon, but at least you are vocalizing something. And I will tell you, that never makes me mad. I've never gotten angry because somebody told me I did a good job with my preaching. But I am wondering, what kind of praise does a mother get at the end of a service? And I will suggest if it's anything, it's probably not much. And so here's a suggestion I want you to take to heart. Instead of taking the time to tell me good job, I want you to find a mother. Now, I'll be fine. Because I'm going to assume that what you would tell me is, that's the best sermon I've ever heard. And Jim, tonight, you can assume that they're going to tell you, that's the second best sermon I've ever heard. I've been sitting on that since about Tuesday. We'll be fine. I haven't choked up in a sermon in a while, so I was thinking today may be a good day to do that. Here's what I want you to find. I want you to find I want you to find a mother that wrestled with a little one the whole time. I don't think they sweat as much as I do, but they work every bit as hard as I do. Wrestling with a little one. And you know, somebody just needs to find that mother and say, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing. You're doing good. Find a mother that just got her family here. Some of you are crying, and I'm not going to do well if I keep seeing you cry. Okay? But find a mother who just got her family here. I think sometimes we overlook that that is not an easy task, to get a family up and get them dressed and have teeth brushed and hair brushed and get everybody here. I get praised a lot of times for the work that I do while I'm here, while we completely overlook there's a lot of work that happened before the doors ever even opened. And so find the mother this morning who has her family here and they're looking presentable. That in itself is an accomplishment. And then even beyond that, find the mother here this morning who has her family here and dressed and presentable, and she's here prepared to teach Bible class too. Somehow she was able to get her family out the door, and she is here and she is ready to do that. Or the mother that you just know is putting in the efforts at home to teach her children. If you're an older mother, find a younger mother and say, you know what, I know how hard Sundays can be. I remember those days. And tell them something encouraging. Find the mother that's raising teenagers right now that may not know what her next move is, and just find something that you can share with her because you have been there too. Maybe there's somebody here this morning, it's not your physical mother, but maybe there is a spiritual mother here. Somebody that you have always looked to. And that you have drawn inspiration from. Find that mother and tell her that you appreciate her. Or how about the mother who has worked outside of the home all week long and she still has her family here on a Wednesday night? That mother needs to be praised. And it needs to be recognized that yes, you had a long day getting your family dressed and off to their day, whatever that holds. And then you had to handle the affairs of your day to try to bring money in to support your family. And then somehow you got to get everybody fed and everybody presentable again and bring them back here, all because you think it is important to have your children here to learn the Bible. That mother needs to be praised. And I want to suggest that that does not just need to be a today thing. If we want to change the narrative when it comes to motherhood, we need to start praising motherhood like we praise other things. Let me also suggest what I think all mothers already know, is that this is a tireless work. Waking up early, staying up late just to get the task done. We saw that in Proverbs 31. Where here is a mother who is spending long, long hours just to get everything done in a day. Or maybe she wakes up early. She wakes up early to have her quiet time, to have her solitude. Maybe it's to read, maybe it's to pray, maybe it's to work on the Bible class she's teaching. But she does that early, sacrificing her sleep, because she knows once the house starts moving, my quiet time is done. We need to praise the mothers who do that. I wonder, when is the Mother's Day off? Can you answer that one for me? When is the Mother's Day off? Because again, if we compare that to a man who goes and does his job, he probably has some built-in sick days. You know, when you wake up and you may literally be sick, or you may just not feel good. And you just don't have the motivation to go, but you've got this bank or this collection of sick days where you can say, I don't feel so good this morning. All I need to do is make a phone call and I don't even have to worry about work for the day. There are lots of men who have that. what does the mother do when she wakes up and she doesn't feel good? There is no phone call to make. It's just getting up and doing it. And I'm afraid we just allow mothers to tirelessly work, sometimes with little help and little recognition. How many mothers sometimes get time away? But even with the time away, they still can't enjoy themselves because they feel guilty about all the things that somebody else is having to do because they're gone. Or maybe there's some other concern with a family. And so the time that's meant to be enjoyed is just time worried about their family. It is a tireless job. I'll tell you, there have been times where I've got a taste of the job. And when I say a taste, I mean a really small taste. I'm talking about Katie's gone for a few hours and I have all three of them. Yes, she trusts me to do that for limited time. But I will tell you, every time that happens, it dawns on me, I couldn't do this all the time. If Katie were to suggest, I'll go outside the home and I'll secure a job and you stay at home all day, you know what I'm telling her? No. No. I'd rather deal with Jim and Jacob all day. And it's not because I like them better than my own children. It is not even close. And it's not because my job doesn't have some level of difficulty. But it is because I very much recognize there is an endurance that I think is innate in a mother that I do not have. Of course, with most mothers, their work is not just limited to their own home. You remember in Proverbs 31 how she's not just taking care of her own home, she's helping take care in somebody else's home too. And this is front and center in my life this week or last week. Katie had some minor surgery. Minor. But it is a setback. And you know, all kinds of people have chipped in. People who are managing their own household, yet they're taking time to help in our household. I will tell you, the real servants of this church are not the men who hold the title deacon. It is the tireless workers who never get their name in the bulletin, who don't have the official title. It is the tireless workers who see to the needs of the saints. Those are the real servants of the congregation. I don't mean that to be offensive to the deacons, because we have good deacons who serve our church well. But I think if we would recognize more than we do, there are lots and lots of servants doing the real work of the congregation, and they're not men. That is just a reality. And I think about what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 25, where Jesus gives us a picture of a judgment scene, and He's separating the sheep from the goats, the right and the left. And you know what Jesus is doing? As He's saying, here's who gets the kingdom of heaven, He's not saying it's the people who performed well in front of everybody else on Sunday. It's not the people who got the title. It's not the people who gave the most in the contribution. It's the people who fed the hungry and took care of the sick and visited with the needy. That's what Jesus said. I'm not saying those other things are unimportant. I'm not saying those are the only factors, but I am saying when Jesus is talking about who's getting into heaven, you know who He said is getting in? He said it is the people who serve others. And if we were to look around, guess who's leading the charge doing that? It is not me. And it is not any man that I know of in here. It is the women. And we don't need to think lightly of that. Here's another thought about motherhood. It is demanding. And here's what I mean by demanding. It requires lots of skills. It's not just demanding of time. It requires a lot of skills. You recognize that mothers have to be teachers, which means they have to have some knowledge and they have to have some wisdom. But mothers also have to be entertainers. I don't know if you know this or not. You do if you have children. Nothing lasts long. And so a mother is constantly trying to occupy children. And they have to be nurses. And if you have more than one child, she automatically becomes a referee. And she has to be a disciplinarian. And she's got to be able to cook. And she's got to be able to clean. And she's got to be able to shop. And she's got to be an event planner. And she's got to be a schedule coordinator. And she's also got to anticipate what lies ahead so that when we get to that point, we are ready. And there's probably lots more that I could add to that list. But you get to the point. I don't know of another job on earth that requires as many skill sets as being a mother. And all of that says, the fact that she does a tireless job, and the fact that she has to wear lots and lots of hats, all of that says that she has to be incredibly tough, both emotionally and physically. And then, that's just the motherhood stuff. And guess who she's also got to deal with? Husbands, they have to deal with us. And if we would be fair, we would admit, sometimes when we come in, we don't make things easier. Because I have my own needs. And I have my own things that I want accomplished. And so motherhood is not just demanding from a skill set. And it's not just demanding because of the children. It is all of that. And then there's a husband to take care of too. It is a sacrificial thing. How many mothers walk through the store and they browse through Amazon and they find something that they want? Maybe it's a new outfit, maybe it's a new pair of shoes, maybe it's something for the home and they would really like to have this decoration or this for the home, yet they put it on the shelf or they relegate it to the wish list because money's just tight right now. Or they know that the kids need braces, or we've got these medical bills, or that the kids are going to need clothes for summer, or shoes for this, or they're going to play this sport, and that's going to cost us this money. How many of those things run through a mother's mind? And so whatever it is that she wants for herself, she just says no to, or maybe she just says, not now. Maybe it's because the husband has spent a lot of money he shouldn't have spent on his hobbies or his habits. And the mom, being very aware of that, just says no. And of course, the sacrifice of motherhood is not limited to just money. I would imagine all throughout motherhood, she will continually sacrifice not just things that she wants. She will sacrifice things that she needs so that somebody else in her family doesn't have to do without. Let me also suggest that motherhood is something that is cherished by God. And we could spend a lot of time here. Let me just give you a couple of instances. Biblically speaking, would anybody argue that the home is not important? Couldn't do that, right? And I think that makes it all the more impressive that God put the woman in the home where He did. I want to suggest that God put the woman front and center in the home. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not saying she is the absolute leader of the home, but I do think God has put her at the front and the center of the home. For instance, in Titus chapter 2 and verse 5, Paul writes to Titus and he says, you need to teach the older women to teach the younger women. And he says some things specifically about motherhood and about being a wife. But it is in that context that he says, you need to teach them to be workers at home. And I think that word probably implies some of the domestic duties. Okay? Now, I think it goes well beyond, does she just keep a tidy home? I think the sentiment is that she has taken her home and she has created a particular environment in it. And then there's 1 Timothy 5:14, where Paul there says, I want younger women to marry, have children, and manage their household. Manage their households. I think he is implying that the woman is going to direct the affairs of the house in some capacity. I think there is a very real sense in which God has looked down on the home and he has said to the woman, this is your domain. And I don't think we need to think lightly about the role that God has given the woman in the home. I think about how women are cherished beyond just what they might do in the home. I think about elders and deacons. And you know the qualifications for an elder and a deacon is that they need to have wives. And we could very easily know why, at least one reason, why do they need to have a wife? Well, they need to have children, right? But I am convinced thoroughly that an elder needing a wife is not just so that he has someone who can bring children into the world. I heard it suggested one time that an elder needs a wife because one of the qualifications is that he is supposed to be hospitable and he needs a wife for that. Let me tell you something. Men can be hospitable without women, okay? Now, it is not at all the same. It is not nearly as good. If you come to our house, you need to be thankful that Katie is in charge of hospitality, not me. Because it is way, way better the way that she does it. But the point is not elders need wives so that they can be better at hospitality. As a matter of fact, I think that is somewhat insulting to suggest that that's really what a woman brings to the table. I don't dispute that she can bring that, but I don't think it's limited to that. As a matter of fact, I have known men who served as elders and their wife passed away and they stepped down. And it wasn't because they didn't feel like they still, you know, just didn't meet that qualification. It was, I can't do this job without her. I can't do this job without her. Because he recognized throughout his years of service, it was his wife who was the faithful listener and the perspective that he just didn't have, the wisdom that she could bring to the table, the trusted companion that he could rely on. And he recognized she was invaluable to me. Now I want to tell you, if she is invaluable to the man, who is she also invaluable to? She is invaluable to the church. I didn't ask Jim and Tim this, but I'm guessing both of them would tell you they could not do the job that they do if it weren't for the support of their wife. Two nods. 100%. They could not do what they do without the support of their wife. So let me ask you this question. We pray almost every service for the elders. And I think that is good. I think we need to as a congregation, I think they need to hear the congregation say their name out loud before God, and we are just saying, God, thank you that we have these men in our congregation. Thank you for their willingness. God, give them the wisdom to lead us. We need to be saying those prayers. But you know who we never, ever, ever mention by name in prayer? It's the women that are right there by their side. And if they're valuable to them, they are valuable to our congregation. And neither of them came to me and said, hey, I need you to put in a plug for us. That's just the reality. And it's not just true for elders, it's true for preachers too. Because I get prayed for a lot. I need prayed for a lot. So thank you. But you know who's vital to the work that I do? It is Katie. And just so you don't think that this is just some personal feelings that we should talk about women more, look in your Bibles. Just think about in the New Testament. You know Paul's close companions, Aquila and Priscilla? We know them well because they were fellow workers with Paul in the gospel and outside of the gospel. They traveled with Paul. They took Apollos to the side together. Do you know how many times Aquila, that's the man, do you know how many times he's mentioned in the New Testament? 6. And do you know how many times his wife is mentioned with him? Guess, 6. Paul was very publicly acknowledging not just the work of the man, he was acknowledging the work of the woman that was right beside him, participating in that work. And it's not just those two. In Romans chapter 16, you read the first few verses of Romans chapter 16, you find 7 different women mentioned there. And Paul says of them that they are hard workers, they are fellow prisoners, and they are outstanding among apostles. Have you heard that? Have you seen that? Publicly, by name, here are women who are said to be outstanding compared to among the apostles. And he says specifically of Phoebe, This is Romans 16, verse 1 and 2. I commend to you our sister Phoebe, who is a servant of the Lord in Cenchrea. So you should welcome her in the Lord in a worthy manner of the saints and assist her in whatever she may require of your help. For indeed, she has been a benefactor of many and me also. Do you hear what Paul is doing? He is publicly acknowledging this woman has been a servant of the Lord and she has been valuable. And I don't think that kind of thing exists publicly today. I will tell you, two more women, funny names. But Paul writes about them in Philippi, Euodia and Syntyche. And unfortunately, Paul is maybe mentioning them because there was some, seemingly there was some strife between them. And he's saying, you guys need to help them figure that out. But don't let that overshadow completely the fact that he says these women have shared in my struggle in the gospel. These women have been important to me. And Paul calls them by name. And I think we should follow suit. One last thing. Motherhood has this great potential for this legacy. A legacy of disciples. 1 Timothy chapter 2. I'll tell you why we know 1 Timothy 2 pretty well. It's because in 1 Timothy 2, when we get to the latter part of the chapter, Paul talks about modesty. Alright, so that's one of our go-to modesty verses, and rightfully so. But Paul makes a similar point to 1 Peter 3 where, women, you are so much more than what you parade yourself to be physically. And so we need that verse. But then you know what he says following that verse? He also kind of imposes those limitations. He says, when it comes to the assembly, the men are going to do this, and this is going to be the role of the women. He's not saying one is more important. He's just saying that's what it is. And then we have verse 15. And it says in verse 15, talking about the woman, but she will be saved through childbearing. Now, there are lots of discussions as to exactly what Paul means by that. But I do think in a way, he is speaking somehow to the legacy of women. The legacy of mothers. A woman, according to what he's just said, she's not taking center stage as the preacher. However, do not overlook the fact that she gets to participate in the kingdom in a way that men can't participate. I think that's the point that he's making. She participates in the kingdom in a way that men cannot. And that needs to be valued. I wonder how many children will be in God's kingdom one day because of mothers. A legacy she either started or a legacy she either carried on. And I want you to think about this just in your own family. We're wrapping this up, I promise. But think about this in your own family. I can think back to my own grandmother. Married a man one day that was not a Christian. But one day he became one. And now, all of these years later, there are children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And there are lots and lots of in-laws. And do you know what I'm convinced of? I'm convinced that there will be people in the kingdom because of her legacy. And if I really wanted to expand on that, I could go back a generation before her because I think she's probably just carrying on a legacy that started before her. And that would make that number grow exponentially. And then I think about, again, my own children. And what will they bring into the kingdom one day? Do you see how motherhood is a legacy, a long line of believers? I think about the work that I do as a preacher. And I hope that I do effective work. And I hope one day that people are in the kingdom because of the work that I've done as a preacher. But you know where you could just draw the line back up to? It started before me. And I don't think that needs to be lost on us. There is an incredible value to motherhood that is completely overlooked. And we don't need to do that. And so, let me finish where I started. We need to encourage our young men to grow up and think about preaching. You young men need to listen to that. Because there is a shortage of preachers. The list of churches wanting a preacher versus the number of preachers available is a lot different. One list is a lot longer than the other. And so we need to be encouraging our young men. You need to think about preaching. You need to think about devoting your life to that. But you know what we also need to be doing with our young women? We need to be teaching them how valuable they are just because they're a woman. That's what we need to do. So, I hope this opens up our eyes to how we maybe undervalue what mothers really are and what they bring, not just into our homes, but what they bring into our lives and what they bring into our congregation. Now, everybody here, whether you're a mother or whatever your situation is, you need to be thinking about your soul. Because the greatest thing that mothers can do is bring up their children to know the Lord. And so if you are here this morning and you don't know the Lord, maybe you've never obeyed Him, maybe you've done it in the past and you've left. But if there is anything this morning that is keeping you from being right with God, now is the time you need to be addressing that. And only you know exactly what you need to do. And so if you are ready to get yourself right with the Lord this morning, we are here and we are ready to help you do that. You might choose to come during the invitation song. You might choose to grab me or Jim or Tim or somebody else in the back and just say, hey, I want to talk, I got some questions. But whatever it is, we invite you to make things right with the Lord. If you want to come now, you can while we stand and sing.